Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into a truly insightful document called Pathway to Light. This isn't just any guide. It's designed really as a clear and direct path to understanding the essence of Islam. It aims to answer fundamental questions straight from its pure source, the Quran, and in simple language too. So for anyone looking to gain knowledge quickly but thoroughly, this deep dive is your shortcut. It offers, I think, a fresh perspective that might challenge some common assumptions.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here is the text's precise mission. It's about providing a profound clarity on core Islamic beliefs and practices. It's really crafted as an accessible starting point, not just to clear up misconceptions, which is important, but also to invite you into a deeper, more organic exploration. The idea is you're empowered with understanding, you know, not overwhelmed by just loads of information.
Right. So our mission today is to extract the most important nuggets of wisdom from this source. We'll explore key questions like, who is God and how is he understood? And quote, what is humanity's true purpose? And how does Islam view society, other faiths, even concepts like jihad? Because get ready for some profound distinctions and I think surprisingly relevant guidance that will truly illuminate Islam's core message. So to start, let's go straight to the heart of the matter. When we speak of God in Islam, the document uses a very specific term, Allah. What makes the word Allah so unique, as Pathway to Light explains it?
Well, the text really emphasizes that Allah is the proper unique name of God Almighty. It's distinct from any plural or gendered term. And this isn't just semantics, right? It profoundly shapes the very concept of God in Islam. It stresses absolute unity, oneness, transcendence, completely distinct from any human construct or idol. The Quran defines him as the one everyone depends on, with none like him. And also that, you know, no vision can grasp him, yet he grasps all vision. Essentially, it's saying God is utterly self-sufficient, beyond our physical or even conceptual grasp, yet his knowledge and power, they encompass absolutely everything.
That's a powerful distinction, understanding God as utterly unique and transcendent. So if we cannot fully comprehend Allah, how then does the Quran help us relate to the Supreme Being? What tools does it give us for understanding?
Precisely. And the text guides us through what it calls the names or attributes of Allah. Mm-hmm. Now, these aren't descriptions that limit him, not at all. They're more like ways to approach understanding his infinite qualities. Think of names like the Most Gracious, the Most Merciful, the King, the Holy One, the Creator, the Maker. Mm-hmm. These attributes reveal aspects of his nature, allowing us to build a kind of conceptual relationship with him, even if his actual essence remains beyond our full human comprehension.
Okay, so understanding God through these unique qualities gives us a profound framework. And this framework, it naturally leads us to think about our own place in the universe. So what then does Pathway to Light say about our fundamental purpose, given this understanding of the divine?
Right, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the text clarifies our purpose is serving Allah, but it immediately broadens that understanding. Serving Allah means serving his creation and ultimately benefiting humanity. We are meant to be representatives or caretakers of the world, entrusted with establishing balance and removing imbalances. Your life, your time, your wealth, they're presented as a test of your conduct in this role. This really redefines service from some abstract idea to a deeply practical, impactful role in the world. It invites you, the listener, to see your daily actions as part of a larger divine purpose.
That's a profound shift in perspective. Our existence isn't just about us, it's about our responsibility to the world. So if our purpose is to serve and caretake, where do we find the instructions for this grand mission? The document points us directly to the Quran as the ultimate guide.
Indeed. The Quran is explicitly called the book, and it is guidance, sure, without doubt. It boldly states that the guidance of Allah, that is the only guidance. And what's particularly fascinating here is how Allah's will works regarding guidance. It's not presented as arbitrary or, you know, predetermined in a way that just negates human effort.
That's a crucial point, not arbitrary. So how does Pathway to Light articulate the conditions or factors involved in receiving divine guidance? Is it purely preordained, or does human effort play a significant role?
Human effort is absolutely central. The text clarifies that Allah guides those who seek his guidance and those who turn to him. Conversely, it says he leaves astray those who do wrong or forsake his path. But critically, it adds that Allah helps those who try to change. This isn't about random decisions, right? It presents a consistent way of dealing with humankind where individual initiative and effort towards change are recognized and well rewarded.
That makes perfect sense. A powerful emphasis on personal responsibility and seeking. Beyond how guidance is received, what does the document tell us about the nature of the Quran itself? How does it describe this divine source of instruction?
The text outlines several powerful characteristics. It explains that it cannot be produced by other than Allah, really underscoring its divine origin. Furthermore, it asserts that it is protected by Allah from change, guaranteeing its preservation over time, which is incredible. You're told it has no discrepancies or contradictions, presenting a coherent and consistent message, and it's described as easy to understand and remember. These points together present the Quran not as some ancient, obscure text, but as a living, accessible, and divinely preserved source of wisdom.
So it's commanding us to understand it and calls it a light and a criterion between right and wrong. What this all means for you as a seeker of knowledge is that the Quran is highlighted as an accessible, preserved, and active guide. It's not just something to be passively observed, but a living text to engage with directly, designed to illuminate your path. Okay, so once we understand why we're here and what guides us, the next natural question is how we live this out. Let's look at the foundational beliefs and daily practices that shape a Muslim's life, as outlined in Pathway to Light. What are the key articles of belief that ground this faith?
Right, the text lays out six fundamental beliefs drawing directly from the Quran. First and foremost is belief in Allah, as we've discussed. Second, belief in his angels who serve God, bring revelation, and importantly, don't have personal choice like humans do. Third, belief in his books, recognizing previous scriptures like the Law of Moses, the Gospel of Jesus, but with the Quran as the final confirming revelation. Fourth, belief in his messengers, all human, like Muhammad, sent throughout history to guide humanity to the one Allah, and all are to be accepted as true prophets. Fifth, belief in the Day of Judgment. Everyone will be held accountable for their actions, and crucially, no one bears another's burden. Individual responsibility. And finally, belief in death and the hereafter, acknowledging this life is temporary, with a reward in paradise or punishment in the fire later. These beliefs together form a really comprehensive worldview. They structure one's understanding of life, purpose, and destiny.
These are profound beliefs indeed, forming the very foundation. What about the common practices then, often called the pillars of Islam? How do they manifest this faith in daily life and provide that structured way for believers to connect and contribute?
Absolutely. The document outlines these essential practices too. It starts with a simple yet profound act of testifying to one God. That's the core. Then there's salah, the ritual prayer. It's a direct way to remember Allah. It's performed at prescribed times daily, usually after ablution, a ceremonial washing for purity, and involves specific postures like bowing and prostrating. It cultivates mindfulness of one's words and actions.
Okay. And beyond prayer.
Next is zakah. This is a mandatory annual charity, a specific percentage of one's accumulated wealth given to the poor and needy. It's designed not just as social welfare, though it is that, but also to purify wealth and promote social equity. It reminds us that resources are ultimately from God and meant to circulate for everyone's benefit.
That's a key social dimension. What else?
Then we have fasting during the month of Ramadan. It's a period of spiritual reflection, self-discipline, with specific allowances, of course, for those who are ill or traveling. And finally, Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca. This is a duty for those who are physically and financially able. It emphasizes good behavior and observing sacred rites. So these aren't just rituals. They are structured ways to deepen one's connection with faith and actively contribute to the well-being of society.
This next point offers, I think, a significant clarification for a broader understanding. How does Islam, as presented here in Pathway to Light, view other faiths and their scriptures? Is there a call for unity or a strict separation?
The document makes a very clear and powerful statement here. It asserts that Islam guarantees freedom of religion. It explicitly encourages believers to call to common terms with people of other faiths.
Common terms, meaning?
Meaning emphasizing the shared worship of one Allah and avoiding partners. It's seen as a common ground for dialogue. It even says that those who believe in Allah and the last day and do good, regardless of their specific scripture, shall have their reward. Furthermore, believers are encouraged to have good relations and invite people of other faiths with courtesy and wisdom.
That's a powerful statement in the document. How does this principle, freedom of religion, manifest, especially considering, you know, historical and contemporary complexities? And does this openness extend to how we view tradition itself?
It absolutely extends to examining tradition. The text issues a clear warning. Following traditions can be an obstacle to the truth if it's not based on knowledge. Blind following is discouraged. The Quran explicitly states that Satan uses traditions to mislead and that superstitions are not from Allah, but are essentially lies attributed to Allah. It's about personal conviction and seeking knowledge directly from the divine source. Instead, it asserts that every people will stand to account independently. So the text is really emphasizing personal conviction over just mere adherence to inherited traditions. It urges reason and direct engagement with truth.
So fundamentally about personal conviction and critical thinking rather than blind adherence. This leads us to a fascinating insight into concepts like jihad, which are, let's face it, often profoundly misunderstood. The document makes a crucial distinction here.
Yes, and this clarification is vital. What's particularly compelling is the distinction drawn between jihad and qital. Jihad in the Quran truly refers to striving to the utmost. It's a profound, personal, and communal effort in God's path. This can be intellectual, moral, or social, using the Quran as a guide. It's a broad concept of struggle.
Okay, so striving. How is that different from qital?
Qital specifically refers to physical fighting, and it's strictly permitted only under very specific conditions when one is wronged to protect the ill-treated and oppressed. And crucially, it states, believers must not be the aggressors. That's a key condition. It further emphasizes accepting peace unless there's a genuine suspicion of treachery and also releasing prisoners of war. So this offers you, the listener, a much more nuanced perspective on these commonly discussed topics. It emphasizes peace, reason, and individual accountability over blind adherence or aggression.
This consistent emphasis on knowledge and seeking truth seems central to the entire document. What then does Pathway to Light tell us about the importance of education and understanding in a Muslim's life?
Knowledge is held in exceptionally high regard. The text highlights that reading and writing are teachings of Allah, framing literacy itself as a divine gift. It stresses that educating oneself is important and even poses that rhetorical question, are those equal, those who know and those who do not know? Obviously implying they are not. And this isn't just about accumulating facts. It stresses that knowledge must be translated into action. It has to have an impact. It also encourages studying all of creation, geology, biology, history, seeing them as signs of Allah. It's really a comprehensive call to intellectual engagement with the world around us, viewing learning as a pathway to understanding God's wisdom.
What's particularly striking, I think, is how it moves beyond just formal knowledge. What kind of character does the text describe for an individual striving to live by these principles? It seems like a very comprehensive guide to ethical living.
It truly is. A holistic framework for personal conduct. The document details numerous characteristics. It starts with submission to Allah, which then manifests as being beneficial to others. That includes parents, relatives, orphans, neighbors, the needy, a wide circle of responsibility. A Muslim is described as humble, forgiving, grateful, and profoundly just, even if it's against oneself or relatives. That's a high standard. Fulfilling contracts, avoiding vain talk, being charitable, balanced in spending, respectful, establishing peace, avoiding suspicion, controlling anger.
Controlling anger is specifically mentioned.
Yes, explicitly. And crucially, practicing what they preach. The consistency between belief and action is vital. It's an ethical blueprint for shaping one's entire being, designed for daily life and interactions.
And finally, to round out this deep dive, what does Pathway to Light say about humanity itself and the position of women, topics of keen interest and often subject to, well, a lot of discussion?
The text underscores that all humans share the same origin, emphasizing a fundamental unity. Differences in skin color and language. They're presented as signs of Allah for us to know and learn from one another, not as reasons for division or hierarchy. It highlights that mankind is one, and any divisions are typically caused by selfishness and jealousy, not by some divine decree.
And on the position of women.
Regarding women, the document unequivocally states, men and women are equal in the sight of Allah and have an equal reward for their actions. It details their rights, including inheritance rights, the right to a dowry, protection within marriage, and maintenance if divorced. These are specific legal and social rights. It also mentions specific guidelines for dressing modestly, for both men and women actually, though detailed here for women, presented as a means of protection and dignity. This really paints a picture of a faith deeply intertwined with personal development, social justice, and intellectual curiosity for all individuals, regardless of gender or background.
So what does this all mean for you, the learner, in navigating the vast ocean of information out there? We've taken a truly comprehensive deep dive into Pathway to Light. We've covered everything from the unique nature of Allah to humanity's profound purpose, the guidance of the Quran, core beliefs, practices, and Islam's views on other faiths, society, and personal character.
And this document consistently reinforces the idea that the Quran is a pathway to light for people from all walks of life. It urges us to read, understand, and apply its teachings in our daily lives. It offers immense clarity and practical answers, not just for spiritual questions, but for living a just, balanced, and impactful life, striving for both personal betterment and societal contribution.
The text ends with five key duties we owe to the Quran. Believe in it, read it, understand it, follow it, and teach it. That's quite a call to action, a powerful call to continuous engagement, really, and a challenge for active, lifelong learning. So here's a thought for you to carry forward from our deep dive today. What might change in your own life if you truly approached every challenge, happy or sad, by opening yourself to guidance from its pure source, committing to both learning and, importantly, purposeful action?